Thanks for listening to On Security, conversations and tips from the world's leading security experts across network, system, and software security topics. For more information, visit informit.com/podcast and subscribe today.
You know, what we've been, you know, talking about data, another Google application, which once you start using it, it's invaluable, and that's maps.google.com. And, you know, 10 years ago, the imagery on Google Maps, if you could get it, would be, tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And a lot of people don't appreciate, you're getting this imagery, which wasn't too long ago you had to have a military clearance and a huge budget. So it's free. And once again, when we start mentioning that free word, on the opposite side, what you're losing is security. So Google Maps, all their other, location tools, how much of an issue is that? Is, people finding you, your employers, if I Google, someone Googles, how do you get from their house to some resort, can they Google their other travel plans and say, hey, this guy's going by himself and his wife's not going on that, you put two and two together, it doesn't add up.
Well, I mean, you hit on something very important when you look at, the mapping, both mapping and location-based tools. I mean, when you think about computing platforms, there's a major shift from the desktop to handheld and mobile devices. And I think the number of registered user accounts, there's about 6 billion people on the planet. And I'm sorry, cell phone accounts, registered cell phone accounts. There's 6 billion people on the planet, and there's about 3 billion, about half, have that number in cell phones. So that's an incredible number of mobile devices. And cell phones are becoming more and more intelligent. But oftentimes they provide the ability to uniquely identify the person, say, by the phone number being used. There are many services are being crafted for mobile devices. They have integrated GPS capability in many cases, and if not, the cell they are in provides their location, or more or less their location. So I think it's certainly within the capabilities of the large online companies to know where people are many of the time when they're using a given product or service. And if they're using the different tools like Google Maps and the like, they can know their travel plans historically, where they've been. Maybe every year they go to the same place, as well as plans in the near future, and the route they're taking. It's tremendously powerful. They could tell whether I think it's entirely possible to tell, in many cases, whether someone's going by themselves, who they're going with. Oftentimes, if there's people are all searching on the same relatively unique location, all of a sudden there's a signature. Anytime there's a unique attribute to what people are doing online, then that can provide a connection between a set of people or companies that otherwise there was no relationship. So if they're all searching on a unique location or street address in a given city overseas, all of a sudden there's a relationship where there wasn't one before.
There's a expanding on that. There's a group, and they've got a website called StopInternetPredators.org, and one of their feelings is that Google Street View can upload images of kids, where these kids are playing, where they hang out, and then this can be misused by predators, to target their kids. What their goal is they want to ban Street View from neighborhoods until they feel it's appropriately safeguarded to make sure, kids' safety and privacy are guarded. I mean, is this, an off-the-wall approach, or is it feasible that the child predators, rather than circling in their in their cars, are just going to go to start their predatory searches by going to Street View, seeing where the kids are, and go there? That's putting you on the spot with that question. But this is a the question is how deep is Google Street View? What can it be used? Or is this an organization really who's taking looking back to an enemy of the state, putting a lot more power into an entity than it really has?
It's hard to say specifically how child predators operate, but anytime you put information out there on the web, it's guaranteed to be misused. So have these tools been misused by child predators? Almost certainly, it would be my assessment. How frequently? Hard to say. But the idea, I think it really goes far beyond that, and that we're in a public space. Our pictures can be taken in the United States. So this information can be collected, and when it's available online, people will find ways to misuse it. Google has taken steps, at least I know at least in one city, they're looking at technology, from my research, to blur out people's faces or even anonymize people's faces in a variety of different ways so that it helps add some degree of protection. So that one facet is what is publicly available versus the raw information that's collected. So you could consider the search box. People use it for Google hacking, and they'll go out there and try and find information about vulnerabilities on a given computer. Or people could use Street View to find out information. And it's up to the online company to filter what they allow to be made public. So at some point, Google may decide to blur all the images of people's faces, which would provide an increase in privacy using that system. The flip side, though, is it goes back to capabilities. Who has the raw unedited data? Did that change propagate to every copy of that information internal to the company? My guess would be probably not. So that information, with all the companies offering services any service, every document that people have requested to be pulled down from the public facing search server, it could very well exist in a cache with the online company. And the same thing with images that were blurred out. Does the online company have access to the raw data? For Street View, almost certainly. For satellite images, there are blurred out areas of satellite images using these services. I don't know where that anonymization occurs, but I suspect it's with the online company. And if so, they probably would have the underlying original unedited image. So just knowing the locations that were blurred out, having access to all, just knowing those locations themselves could be tremendously enlightening.
Chapter 9 of your book discusses, countermeasures. Anything, end users, people listening to this, what are some, quick and dirty things they could do they're not opening the door to all their information, quick do's and don'ts, anything you'd advise?
It's really a hard question because the chapter provides partial solutions, and maybe if you implemented every single countermeasure in that chapter, you'd have a reasonably anonymous online experience, but at the same time, you'd have an almost unusable online experience. And that's really the tension these days, that if you employ everything, then it becomes almost unmanageable to use on a day-to-day basis. So to get around that, being aware is the first thing, understanding what you're typing in. And when you're using these online tools, do it carefully. Consider the long-term picture. So kind of thinking getting that image in people's minds, changing, and I hope to do that with the book, is change their view on what they're giving away and what it could be used for. But I've been quite impressed with the recent Firefox 3.0. They have some very nice privacy features built in, and in particular, the easiest thing would be cookies. to turn them off and to block third-party cookies. It has that capability. So at least when you're going to a website, that you set it to delete cookies once it's turned, the browser is closed. So that you, basically each session you're throwing away the cookies and starting over. The second is to turn off third-party cookies, and that would help dramatically with tracking people across many websites. But it's not a full solution because you still have IP addresses in the mix, and that provides uniquely identifying information, even if a cookie isn't involved. So, sadly, as of today, part of the book is in that chapter is a call to arms or a call to action, trying to get people motivated to find better solutions. So we can do some things, but there isn't one cure-all out there that I can point people to.
Sort of ending on a different note, there's one of the people in the Google space, Johnny Long, who has some books on that. He also has a presentation he gives called Hacking Hollywood, and he shows the absurdity in a lot of Hollywood movies about what technology can and can't do. There was a movie came out earlier part of this year called Untraceable. Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't. Could you fill me in a little?
My question is, it's about a serial killer who has a website, and the authorities can't find the website. So I just thought, if you had any thoughts on that, we're talking how impossible anonymity is, but you've got this serial killer who's got this website live streaming video of the victim. Millions of people go to the site, but the cyber crime team can't, with all the technology, with Nmap, with everything, they just can't seem to shut down the site. So just wasn't sure your any thoughts on that. But if you didn't see the movie, then
the premise is pretty clear. I think that if there's a determined effort, people can find you. I would suspect that's the case in almost all instances, and particularly when combined with external information. So surveillance cameras and street cameras on the streets and RFID tags in people's cars and things as they use the Easy Pass and systems like that. I think anonymity like that is really difficult. But then again, you have to look at, say, the botnet community. There's a thriving ecosystem out there that allows people using other people's computers and a variety of forms of misdirection to allow botnets to thrive and phishing sites to thrive. They can be taken down, and oftentimes they can pop up again in another place.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank Greg Conte, author of the upcoming book, Google Security, How Much Does Google Know About You? That's coming out in October, published by Addison Wesley. My name is Ben Roski, and thank you, Greg, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very much, Ben. Very enjoyable.
Thanks for listening to On Security, conversations and tips from the world's leading security experts across network, system, and software security topics. For more information, visit informit.com/podcasts and subscribe today.